To glow in the dark.
Glow in the dark. Glow in the dark.
This is the Science Fiction Podcast, Glow in the Dark Radio. I'm your host, your writer and reader, Mike Luoma. Our music is by Juan Carlos Quatordio. We've got an extended chapter from Alibi Jones on today's podcast. So extended it took me a really long time to edit this thing, or re-edit it, as I'm going through all the chapters of Alibi Jones and the Sunrise of Her, and editing the audio, not changing the content, just kind of tightening things up a little bit. This chapter didn't need that much, but it still took me a while to get through it. Started out at about 34 minutes, it's now about 32. So it's a pretty long chapter that you're about to hear. And, you know the cool thing here? You don't need to know that much to enjoy it. I've decided I'm going to read the first part of this chapter at Balticon, which is happening this coming weekend, down in Baltimore, Maryland. Be at the Baltimore Renaissance Harbor Place Hotel. Gonna be quite the scene. I always look forward to going to Balticon. But yeah, I'll be reading this book from this chapter, I decided, for my reading. More about that in just a little bit. Let me set up the chapter for you, because I want you to listen. When we last left Alibi Jones, he, Katie, and Kit were sneaking through the access tunnels and back ways of the city, trying to make their way to Kismet's lowest level, where transport to the spaceport and their way off-planet awaits them. But blocking their way is the very man responsible for holding Kit and Katie captive, and who has threatened to have Alibi killed on sight if he's seen on Kismet. That's the ruler of the planet, crime lord Rene Lavalour. He's in the way. Can they get past him? Make it to their cab and get out to the spaceport? Get to the ship and get off world? Seems like a lot to expect to go well. So we'll see if they can pull it off. Coming up, in the second to last chapter, the penultimate chapter of Alibi Jones and the Sunrise of Her. That's coming up on Glow in the Dark Radio. If you want to find my fiction online, even get some free stuff, just head to glowinthedarkradio.com. And I had been going with a green glow-in-the-dark radio theme. I've just changed it over. I updated my website and everything. It's now all purple. Going for a purple glow-in-the-dark radio look. We'll see how that goes. May switch back to green. My business cards are still the green, so it's the way it is. But yeah, glowinthedarkradio.com, mikeluoma.com gets you there too, mikeluoma.com. We have a Facebook page too. Facebook.com/glowinthedarkradio, and a Facebook group too, the Radio Activists. Just ask to join. And of course, you can find my own page, Facebook.com/MikeLuoma, MikeLuoma. That's how I am on Twitter too, afterthere.com/MikeLuoma. On Instagram, I'm glowinthedarkradio, so you can find me there as well. Lots of places to say hey online. Hope you do. Speaking of radio activists, that's what I call my mailing list, and you can become one. Just head to glowinthedarkradio.com or mikeluoma.com or the Facebook page and sign up. There's a subscribe box right on the front page, most of those sites. Actually, on the Facebook page, you have to click where it says sign up, which is right on the front page, but you know, it's there. If you do sign up for the mailing list, you get the exclusive Glow in the Dark Radio Guide to Life. So there's that to look forward to. It's a one-of-a-kind anthology. So I hope you'll sign up. Become a radio activist. And you can join the group on Facebook, too. Now, as I was mentioning, Balticon's coming up this weekend. That's happening Friday through Monday. The Renaissance Baltimore Harbor Place Hotel is the exact name of the place. Inner Harbor of Baltimore, Maryland. So I'll be driving down from northern Vermont to the Inner Harbor tomorrow, Thursday. And so far, I've only got a couple things going on, but I'm hoping to add more. Actually, there's going to be one more thing on the future happening as well. But so far, it's Saturday at 7, The Great Divide, Genre versus Literary Fiction. At 8, I've got a reading with Doc Coleman and Charlie Brown. That's when I'm going to be doing this bit from this chapter. Sunday, 10 a.m., I've got writing scripts based on your own work. 4 p.m., Transmedia on the Cheap. And 6 p.m., Which Way Do We Go? What's Happening with Podcasting? Again, that's all at the Renaissance Baltimore Harbor Place Hotel. It's Balticon 52, I believe. Go to balticon.org if you want to find out more. And maybe I'll see you there. My other news is kind of continuing news. I'm now on WBKM.org. Internet radio. I'm working with founder Tony Gallucci. And we're making it an amazing radio station. It's in the AAA format, which is Adult Album Alternative. I help create the mix you hear 24/7, too. I mean, aside from the specialty shows that we do carry. We have a bunch of really cool ones of those, so it's not really 24/7. But, you know, any other time, I'm helping create that mix. And I'm live Monday through Friday, noon until about 2. Although I won't be there this week, Thursday, Friday, and Monday and Tuesday, because I'll be at Balticon. But yeah, give a listen. Let me know what you think. And that's all for the news. Coming up next, we've got Chapter 28. The very long Chapter 28. Of Alibi Jones and the Sunrise of Her. On Glow in the Dark Radio.
Hey guys, I'm Ray Belli, the host of Words for Granted, a brand new podcast that looks at how words change over time. Have you ever wondered where words come from or why they mean what they mean? Yeah? Well, me too. In fact, I think about these things all the time, and that's why I've created Words for Granted. It's kind of like an ongoing greatest hits compilation of the most fascinating word evolutions in the English language. Did you know that villain once meant farm worker, or that bead once meant prayer? The bottom line is, if you're a word nerd, let's be friends. You can find out more about the show at wordsforgranted.com and follow Words for Granted on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. I hope you tune in to the next show.
Now, here's Chapter 28 of Alibi Jones and the Sunrise of Her. On Glow in the Dark Radio. I think we're going to need a major distraction to get out of here, Alibi says to Kit and Katie. How close are we to the engine room?
The engine room? Katie asks, puzzled. There is no engine room.
There are engines, Alibi says.
There's got to be an engine room.
Alibi thinks for a minute. They probably don't call it that anymore. Brady Thomas and I passed a power plant earlier. That might be it. Is there a power plant control room?
Yeah, Katie says. I found it one time. Next floor down on that ladder we climbed.
She looks back the way they came.
But it's not a way out. The room is guarded.
There are guards in the control room? Alibi asks.
Not inside the room, but there are usually a couple outside the room.
Outside the door? I mean, if we're in there, will they be able to see us, hear us?
They're just outside, I think.
But it was years ago.
Katie shakes her head.
Shit, Alibi, everything I know about the place is old news.
What are you proposing to do in the control room? Kit asks.
Katie looks surprised. She hadn't thought to ask.
Yeah, why should we go there?
To create our distraction, Alibi says. We're going to go big and go home.
What are you thinking? Katie asks.
Kit interrupts.
I am thinking we should not be holding a discussion here, around the corner from the proprietor of this place. If I cannot kill him, I would like to get away from him.
Okay, let's go, Katie says. She starts back down the corridor the way they came. Kit and Alibi follow. At the old crawl space, Katie opens the hatch. She climbs through and stretches across the drop to grab the ladder. As she begins the descent, she calls up to the other two in a hoarse whisper.
Remember, haven't used this part of the access for a long time. No guarantees, she says.
Alibi and Kit follow her down the access.
They're lucky. Nothing's really changed since Katie was a child. The manually operated hatch on the next floor or deck down is still there. Katie unlocks and opens it a fraction, so the thin sliver of light shines into the darkened shaft, lighting up Alibi and Kit still perched on the rungs of the ladder above her.
"Don't open it yet," Alibi cautions with a whisper. "There could be someone on the other side."
"Shh."
Katie shushes him. She lowers herself further so she can peer through the opening. She looks back up at him after a quick peek.
"There's someone in the room," she says. "Looks like a tech."
Kit slips past Alibi on the ladder.
"Pardon me," he purrs at Katie.
He slides past her and out the door. Katie closes the hatch behind him.
Whoop!
A dull thud sounds. Something hitting the wall, hard. The hatch opens up. Kit pokes his head through.
"Come on,"
Kit calls. Katie and then Alibi enter the power plant control room. A man lies on the ground, unconscious.
"His head had an unfortunate meeting with that wall," Kit explains. "And if there are guards on the other side of that door, they have not yet made their presence known,"
Kit says, gesturing at a normal sliding door on the other side of the room with a nod of his head.
"So," Katie asks, "now what? What are we doing here? This used to be a ship, right?" Alibi says. "An orbital platform Lavalore turned into a mobile city before landing it here on Kismet. That's why there are engines downstairs, right?"
"Well, yeah, but," Katie starts.
"Those engines were disconnected 20 years ago," Kit interrupts.
"Disconnected? Or just mothballed?"
Alibi speculates.
"Katie? I don't know."
"Well, I'd bet you anything," Alibi begins. This time Katie interrupts.
"You know I hate that expression," she huffs, "especially here."
"Just a figure of speech," Alibi offers in mild protest. "Sorry, it's just..." Alibi tries to explain his theory.
"A smart criminal will always leave himself a couple of outs, even an all-out emergency option, just to make sure he can escape. So I don't think Lavalure would have disconnected the engines, at least not entirely. And the controls for them should be around here somewhere. And I'm going to fire them up."
"You can't do that," an unknown voice mumbles.
The tech on the floor has stirred. Kit crosses the room in a leap, pouncing to the man's side to restrain him.
"You can try to fire up the engines, but without the proper preparation, they'll just explode."
"You see," Alibi says, excited, "they are still attached."
"Did you not just hear him say they'll blow up?"
Katie says.
"Guess we'll just have to take that risk," Alibi says. "Hell, isn't gambling what Kismet is all about?"
"Did you have to go there?"
Katie asks him. Alibi shrugs.
"Seems your gamble paid off," Kit nods to Alibi.
"You too?" Katie snaps at Kit.
Alibi looks over at the tech.
"You telling me you don't maintain those engines?"
Kit is sitting on the tech to restrain him. One of the Dakur's arms is pushing down on his back. The Catman's other arm wraps around the tech's neck, Kit's sharp claws out and pressed hard in threat against the man's throat.
"What?"
The tech rasps best he can with his throat under pressure. "Kit, can you help him understand my question?" Kit presses down harder with one of his claws, breaking the skin beneath it and bringing forth a small tear of blood that runs down the man's neck.
"Do you or don't you maintain the engines?"
Alibi asks.
"We do,"
the tech answers.
"Once or twice a year, someone has a look at them. Gotta humor the boss and keep him happy, right? But you can't fire them off."
"Why not?" Alibi asks.
"We're overloaded," the tech says. "Buildings have been built on top of the platform. Structural integrity won't hold." "Guess we'll find out, huh?"
Alibi says. He visually surveys the control interfaces around the room until he sees an inactive one that looks like engine controls.
"Aha! Let's see."
Alibi activates the interface.
"Well, look at that,"
he says, as the panel lights up and comes to life.
"Are you sure this is a good idea?"
Kit asks.
"What is the rest of your plan?"
"After we rock the city just a little, we take advantage of the chaos that ensues to make our run to the port for Thomas's ship."
"Chaos?" Katie asks.
Sure, it'll be like an earthquake, Alibi says. He turns back to the controls. Alibi studies the array in front of him. It's a much more complex system, and an older one, than he's used to from his cruiser. But the underlying principles look to be the same. The power plant is already running full steam to energize the city grid. Alibi unlocks transfer coils, which should allow the engines to draw on the power plant as needed. A modest flow ensues as the engines draw warm-up power. The transfers have a third setting beyond unlock.
Gridlock and isolate? What does that do? Shall I try it? Why not?
Alibi moves the switches up into the third position, but nothing seems to change. The power flow is still minimal. Nothing's exploding so far, Alibi says.
Have you turned on the engines? Kit asks.
They're drawing power, but I haven't engaged them yet. Here we go, Alibi says. He activates the engines. The control room lights dim as the power plant transfers energy from the city grid to the engines.
A deep, bass humming rumbles into life below them. The room begins to shake. Emergency power comes on. Alarms begin to sound. Red emergency lighting bathes the control room. Panels and interfaces around them begin to go dark, but the lights stay on in front of Alibi.
Cool. The engine systems are independent of the main grid, Alibi says. They can't cut my power. He increases power to the engines. Not enough to do anything yet, but enough so that anybody near the engine cones below them should know to get out of the way.
The hum grows louder, and the vibrations begin to grow more violent. The room, and no doubt the entire city around them, is shaking violently.
Shouting and commotion erupts outside the door to the control room.
Get in there! That's where they are!
Someone shouts.
Hope the people underneath the platform have the time and sense to get clear. Can't wait any longer.
Alibi kicks on the engine thrusters. The rumbling grows deafening in volume, drowning out any shouts and any other noises.
The floor begins to pitch, throwing each of them across the room as the massive city platform begins an uneven rise. Kit retains his hold on the tech, despite the tossing. They all stagger to their feet as the rumbling and shaking subsides a little. Alibi checks the engine controls.
We've gone up about a meter. We're hovering, he shouts over to Katie and Kit.
He applies more thrust.
The room jerks up at an angle like a bad elevator, and again the four of them are sent sprawling. The tech and Kit hit the now diagonal wall hard, the catman landing atop the human at an awkward angle. Crack.
I am sorry,
Kit shouts over the rumble.
I have killed this man. It was an accident. He did not need to die.
It is what it is, Katie says coldly. Alibi makes his way along the slanting wall back to the engine controls.
That was a hell of a distraction. Hope it's enough. Time to cut the engines.
Alibi cuts the thrust. He hits the roof as the entire city platform drops a handful of meters. He slams back down to the floor as it lands.
Fuck!
Katie swears as she hits.
Damn!
Alibi hurts all over.
Boom!
The room shakes as something crashes down above them. Other crashes can be heard in the distance as the structures in the city above collapse.
We need to leave here now, Katie says.
She slides down the wall to the hatch and dives through.
Alibi tries to shut off the engine controls, but the interface doesn't respond to his commands.
Did they lock me out? He wonders.
Nah, there'd be some sort of security thing, I think. Looks like it's just broken.
Alibi,
Kit calls over from the hatch.
Be right there.
Alibi looks back at the controls. He notices a tick up in energy draw. The engines are slowly building up thrust again. Alibi tries turning off the main thrusters, but the controls are still unresponsive.
Oh, shit.
Alibi jumps across the room to the hatch. The door to the room slides open.
Lavalure and a guard burst through, trying to stay on their feet as the floor shifts again.
You there. I know you. Who are you?
Lavalure demands.
What have you done to my city?
Alibi ignores the man. He ducks into the shaft,
grabbing for the ladder as he pulls the hatch door shut behind him. Smoke is rising from the shaft below. Kit is above him on the ladder.
"We must go up," Kit says. "Katie knows the way out through the brothel."
"Whatever way we go, make it fast. Lavalor just showed up in the engine room." The engines begin rumbling louder once again.
"What have you done to the engines?"
Kit calls down in alarm as they climb. "Nothing," Alibi shouts back up the ladder. "The control's locked up. I couldn't do anything. The engines are slowly building thrust again on their own. We gotta get out of here." Katie is waiting for them in the main room of the brothel. No longer a decadent scene. Instead, Alibi sees the human toll of his plan for the first time. Girders and beams from buildings that fell above crash down into the brothel's rooms, knocking down walls and killing girls and clients alike. Alibi hears shrieks and cries for help and crying. He sees women pinned under debris and others trying to free them from their traps. "Some plan," Katie says. "Get us out of here," Alibi tells her in a humorless tone. She weaves a path through the destruction. Alibi and Kit follow. Once outside of the brothel, they blend in with the panicked crowds, all trying to flee the platform. Katie's knowledge and calm demeanor help them bust out an emergency exit equipped with an inflatable slide that allows them to safely slip away from the vibrating, rumbling platform. The platform that now begins to rise again behind them. Ahead of them lies the spaceport. All manner of car and craft is flying towards the port, away from the city, in vast numbers. People and aliens alike run down the road toward the port, and Alibi, Katie, and Kit run to join with the crowd. A noise like a massive blowtorch echoes behind them, stopping many in their tracks as they look back to see what's causing the new sounds. As Alibi watches, the center of the platform behind them begins to bulge upwards. A horrific sound of ripping, shrieking metal fills the air. The platform begins to rise again, but then falls with a final ripping, crashing sound. The platform's four main engines appear, pushing their way up through the city platform, the entire engine assemblies ripping up and erupting out from the center of the platform like an upside-down metal volcano. Propellant and flames pour down on what's left of the city, bathing it in destruction and flame as the engine assembly rises on a thick pillar of fire. Free of the platform, the engines begin to careen upwards. There's a flash and a sharp, crackling peal of thunder as the engines disappear into transpace. "What?" Alibi is shocked. "I didn't set any transpace coordinates. I didn't even turn on the engine's transpace devices. Why did they do that?" He looks at the fiery ruins of the Kismet platform. "I didn't mean for it to go this way. To end like this." An explosion rocks them sideways as a fuel supply in the city erupts in a ball of fire behind them. "We need to keep running. Get to Thomas's ship before someone else steals it." Katie urges Alibi to turn and run. He's still dazed by his destruction. There's another crackling peal of thunder. One of the engines reappears in the sky over them, jumping out of transpace, ripping a hole in the air above the bay. Its thrust spent, the now inert mass drops like a spinning boulder into the water, sending up a huge splashing plume. Alibi begins running again and catches up to Katie and Kit, already on the move. The road winds down to the waterfront. Alibi, Katie, and Kit, and those around them jog, walk, and run down the road towards the spaceport. Thunder peals again. With a flash, there's another engine in the air above them. It rips out of transpace over their heads, looming large in the sky, and then larger, as it seems to aim directly for Alibi. He runs as fast as his legs will carry him, away from the plummeting mass of metal. Woof! Alibi is thrown forward by the impact as the engine hits behind him. Oof! Landing on his chest, he gets the wind knocked out of him. Slowly, he stands back up, and looks back at the crater and the engine, now a misshapen, crushed cone and tangled mass of tubes, pipes, and wires, blackened by a quick trip through the atmosphere. Katie gets up off the ground. Kit is already standing. Alibi backs away from the engine and rejoins them. The gates of the port are just ahead. No one is checking any credentials at the gate as panicked masses pour through. Floaters fly overhead unimpeded. Ground cars roll past them without facing any checkpoints or stops. Most people walk and run toward the commercial carriers and their terminals. Alibi, Katie, and Kit veer off to find Bay 134 and Brady Thomas's ship. The ID codes on the key lead them to the private bays. The opening from the access road to each central hub is wide enough for two cars to pass. The trio try to look inconspicuous as they make their way down the road to Thomas's bay. Nobody seems to notice them. Everyone is too busy looking out for themselves. Each set of five bays spoke off from a central hub. The open front of the bays and the central hub make each set look like flowers from above. Ships rise up out of the bays like swarms of bees leaving a burning hive. Thomas's ship is waiting for them in Bay 134. Alibi opens the vessel with the ship's keys Thomas gave him, and Katie and Kit climb on board. Alibi walks around the outside of the ship to check fuel levels and energy reserves. There's plenty of fuel, but the energy reserves are running low. Alibi hooks up a feeder line, although he doesn't know if there's any power left in the port's energy grid. They're lucky. There's at least a little left for them. As the ship powers up, Alibi walks around Thomas's ship doing a visual inspection. The ship looks good. No problems he can see at any rate. He checks the energy line again. The grid is now dead. He didn't get much juice from it, but there is enough to get the engines up and running. There's still plenty of fuel, but Alibi doesn't need it. The ship's supply is full. Alibi disconnects the energy line and walks it back out to the central hub. A large hover car lands nearby, and three mechanically enhanced Kismet Guardians emerge, each carrying an energy rifle. Lavalure gets out of the car behind them, along with a sharply dressed woman with short black hair. At first, they don't see Alibi. Apparently, Lavalure's own escape ship is parked nearby. Alibi tries to duck around the supply hub to stay out of sight. "I have the best luck," Alibi says. One of the guardsmen overhears.
"You, hold it right there!"
he shouts at Alibi. Lavalure turns to look. His eyes grow wide when he sees Alibi.
"You, again!" Lavalure shouts. "Now I do know who you are, Alibi Jones! Peterson warned you for me! Set foot on Kismet and you're a dead man! I keep my promises!"
Lavalure turns to the woman and his guardsmen.
"Kill him!"
Trying to keep the hub between him and the guardsmen, Alibi turns on a fuel line and sprays ship's fuel at the guardsmen and Lavalure. As the fuel gushes out faster and faster, Alibi dares to step out from behind the hub to direct the spray point blank at the nearest guardsmen. Their bodies may be cybernetically enhanced, but apparently their brains aren't enhanced by much in the way of common sense. The guardsman turns and fires at Alibi. Alibi drops the still-flowing fuel line as the energy bolts ignite the fuel around him. He runs with an eye back on the guardsman, who now bats at bright blue flames leaping up his body as if he was trying to shoo away bugs. Too busy to fire again, the man is consumed by the flames, turning into a walking pyre, until he drops down to his knees and collapses, melting in a puddle of flaming fuel. Alibi runs towards Thomas's cruiser, with the other two guardsmen advancing on him. He's almost at the ship. He turns in time to see the nearest guard raise his gun to fire.
Whoosh!
The guardsman takes an energy bolt to the chest and stumbles. Alibi turns back to see Katie has left Brady's ship and reappeared next to him. She's lowering the rifle in her hands and has another one slung over her shoulder. "Hey," she says, "Thomas had guns on the ship. Here." She tosses the rifle in her hands to Alibi and swings the rifle on her back around. She fires again at the downed guardsman.
Flash!
"Thanks," Alibi says.
I owed you, she says. Now I don't. Let's go. Wait, hold on.
Flash!
She hits another guardsman. Where'd you learn to shoot like that? Alibi asks her as they close the distance to the ship. We're armed when we go out on the retrieval missions. They teach us how to shoot, she explains.
Whoosh!
A bolt hits Katie in the shoulder, and a rifle goes scuttling away.
Ow, that fucking hurts!
She shouts. Get to the ship, Alibi tells her. I'll cover you. You know how to shoot? She asks. Safe training, he tells her. He lifts the rifle and sights the well-dressed woman. She's aiming at him at the same time.
Flash!
Alibi is the faster shot, but he misses his target. He'd only wanted to hit the gun, not the woman. But she goes down when the bolt hits her head instead of her weapon. Alibi scans through the sight and sees Lavalure trying to get a bead on him. He shoots and hits the gun out of Lavalure's hands.
His gun I hit? Damn.
Alibi stops backing up and instead advances on Lavalure. He shoots an energy bolt at the man's feet.
Fwash!
Lavalure jumps and stumbles away from the fire. Alibi shoots the ground next to him.
Fwash!
Lavalure is knocked on his back. Alibi advances and stands over him with his rifle ready.
I've called more guardsmen, Lavalure says. If you were smart, you'd leave now, while you can.
I should kill you, Alibi says.
You should kill me, Lavalure says. I will kill you. First chance I get, if you don't. I was just playing with you. I bought your man, Brady Thomas. He would have turned on you and turned you over if he'd lived.
You're lying, Alibi says. You didn't know who I was.
I didn't know you on sight, you're right. But I knew who you were, and what you were doing.
Like hell you did, Alibi scoffs.
You'll never know,
Lavalure says. Alibi sights his rifle on the man's groin. I don't have to kill you. Could just maim you, Alibi says.
Maybe we can make a deal, Lavalure says.
Alibi looks up at the smoking ruins of Kismet. Doesn't look like you've got much left to deal with.
Not here and now, thanks to you. But my wealth is spread far beyond Kismet. This is not my only wealth. I have many holdings. I have recovered amazing artifacts that once belonged to the ancient enemy. Maybe we can trade?
Your life for some alien bauble? Some museum piece? Alibi taunts him. I don't think so.
I'm not talking about museum pieces, Mr. Jones. I'm talking about ancient weapons, powerful devices once employed by the ancient enemy. I could give you the charts and directions to find one for yourself.
Next, he'll be offering me the travel chair. Been there, done that.
An empty promise of ancient riches for your life? Alibi asks. You don't value your life too much, do you?
No, I do,
Lavalure insists. How can I trust that you weren't sending me off on some wild goose chase? Alibi questions him.
I'll give you full documentation. Ever hear of the Throne of Inokata? It gives the user the ability to travel by thought. I have found it. It's on the mad planet Metcalf. I can lead you there. It can be yours.
It was mine, Alibi breaks the news to Lavalure. I traded it for something else I needed.
You were the one who found it? You were the one who had the chair and gave it away?
Lavalure questions him. What do you know about that? Alibi asks, suspicious.
You are a fool,
Lavalure shouts up at him.
Flash!
Ah!
Lavalure shrieks as an energy bolt rips into his shoulder. Alibi looks at his gun. He didn't fire. Kitty walks up next to Alibi with her rifle in her other hand. Your guy shot my shooting shoulder, Lavalure. I'm shooting with my bad hand, Katie says. Otherwise, you'd be dead. She looks at Alibi. Why haven't you killed him? In cold blood? He asks her. He'd kill you, she says.
I told him that, Lavalure says.
Shut up, Alibi and Katie say in unison. Then Katie shoots Lavalure in the knee.
Flash!
A shadow covers them as a hovercar appears.
Reinforcements,
Lavalure declares as the car lowers. Let's go, Alibi says. He and Katie back away from Lavalure,
each with their rifle trained on the man. Lavalure props himself up on his good knee and struggles up onto his feet. He begins limping away, crossing the central hub on his way to his ship. "Ah, hell," Katie says. She shoots at the pool of fuel that Lavalure is limping through.
Wah!
The fuel explodes into bright blue flames.
Shoom!
The flames engulf Lavalure as the hover car lands next to him.
Ah!
Lavalure tries to tamp out the flames, burning up his clothes. As Kismet guardsmen emerge from the hover car, he shouts for their help.
Help me! Over here! Help me!
Alibi and Katie reach Thomas's ship. They shut out the sound of Lavalure's screams as they close the airlock door behind them. As the inner door cycles open, Alibi turns on Katie.
Why did you do that?
Do what? She asks.
Why'd you shoot the fuel there just now?
Why didn't you? She demands of him.
You've really got to learn to do things for yourself.
No, I don't, he argues. I'm not a sociopath.
Oh, and I am, she flares. Fuck you, Alibi. Get us the fuck out of here, so I can get away from you forever.
Great, he says. He runs for the bridge, with his heart dragging behind him.
No time to get sentimental now, Alibi. Gotta go.
He fires up the power plant and gets the engines running. Out of the ship's front viewport, he can see the guardsmen putting out the fires on Lavalure. He watches the scene as the ship's engines power up. Amazingly, the burnt Lavalure stands. His skin is still smoking. He shakes a guardsman off of him. He limps into the shadows of a distant bay, followed by 7 cybernetic Kismet guardsmen.
Why haven't we taken off? Katie asks him as she walks onto the bridge.
We needed to power up some first.
Shit. Look, Alibi, Lavalore's ship has taken off.
Have a seat, Alibi says, nodding at the co-pilot's chair.
Why should I? She says, defiant.
Jeesh, Katie, Alibi sighs. The ship's weapons controls are there. Since I powered up our power plant, you can actually use the ship's guns. You fire while I get us the fuck out of here. Alibi gets the cruiser up off the ground. Katie fires the ship's guns, but the blasts glance off Lavalure's rising ship.
He's got his shields powered up, she says.
And now, Alibi says, so do we.
Good thing he's shooting at us.
Ka-thang!
The energy bolts glance off their shields as the cruiser rises up into the atmosphere. As the engines propel the ship past escape velocity, they also generate additional energy for the ship's power plant. Alibi directs more power to the shields as Lavalure's cruiser fires at them again.
Ka-thang!
There's a bump. They're shaken, but there's no real contact.
We've got a security platform coming up, Katie says, as she scans the tactical display.
Alibi reverses thrust and slows their ship. He risks a close-up shot from Lavalure's ship as he lets them pass on the ascent. Lavalure's cruiser takes the opportunity and fires a barrage of energy bolts. Alibi gives the starboard shields more juice to deflect the assault. Alibi drops their cruiser back some more. Once Lavalure's ship is ahead of them, Alibi maneuvers around to put Lavalore's cruiser between their ship and the security platform.
Okay, Katie, heat him up. Let's distract the orbital's attention.
Katie draws down the power reserve to return fire with a plasma bolt that hits the cruiser's rear end just over its engines. Lavalore's ship's shields dissipate some of the plasma energy, but the bolt does damage, burning a hole through the cruiser's infrastructure. The rear of Lavalure's cruiser is aglow as oxygen burns off. Alibi talks to himself under his breath.
Come on, come on, come on.
Wish Krish was here. He could probably short-circuit the platform, save us all this anxiety.
Any more return fire? Alibi asks.
Nope, think that surprised him, Katie says. Nice shooting, Alibi compliments her.
Watch that platform. We might have to take out its guns if it sees past Lavalure's ship. I'm plotting a transpace jump.
She doesn't answer, but studies the tactical display for signs of opposition.
Here we go!
Alibi punches in the coordinates, and their ship flashes into transpace. Lavalure's cruiser attempts to follow, flashing into transpace soon after the other ship.
trying to stay on their trail.
That was Chapter 28 of Alibi Jones and the Sunrise of Her on Glow in the Dark Radio.
Well, that's not easy. That wasn't easy at all. Almost there. Still trying to get away. Lavalor still somehow on their trail, even though they've doused him in fuel, set him on fire, shot at him. We'll see if they can finally get away in our next chapter, the final chapter of Alibi Jones and the Sunrise of Her on Glow in the Dark Radio. We'll see what kind of price they have to pay to escape. A very long chapter this week. I do hope you enjoyed that. And we're almost through this book. The Adventures of Alibi Jones. They continue. We'll have a short story or two and then get into the next book. That's the plan, anyway. Speaking of plans, I hope to see you in Baltimore this weekend if you are able to be there. It is Balticon. Done a few of these now. I have a lot of fun. It's kind of like seeing the tribe. Looking forward to that. Even though there's a long drive involved, I try to make the best of it, you know? So maybe I'll see you there. And if not, hope you'll be back here next week. Next time. For Glow in the Dark Radio, for the podcast, and our final chapter of Alibi Jones and the Sunrise of Her. And remember, you can look me up online and say hello. Facebook, Twitter, afterthere.com/MikeLuoma, Mike Luoma. Or go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/glowinthedarkradio. And you can find me online too at glowinthedarkradio.com or mikeluoma.com. Our music is by Juan Carlos Quatordio. And I'm your host, your writer and reader, Mike Luoma. Thank you again for listening to Glow in the Dark Radio.